Our scripture reading this morning is taken from the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 12, verses 46 to 50. If you would like to follow along in the Pew Bible, there is a New International Version for you in the pew. While Jesus was still talking to the crowd, his mother and brothers stood outside, wanting to speak to him. Someone told him, "Your mother and brothers are standing outside wanting to speak to you." He replied to him, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" Pointing to his disciples, he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers, for whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." May God add his blessing to the reading of his word this morning.
Peter Daneka Jr. is the president of the Slavic Gospel Association. The Slavic Gospel Association for many years has been involved in ministry in Eastern Europe, primarily a literature ministry until very recent days, in which both the literature ministry and other forms of ministry in Eastern Europe have become a real possibility. It is our privilege to have him with us as our preacher this morning, and he will be speaking also at 2:30 this afternoon. And we want to listen attentively as we hear what God is doing around the world and in this particular spot, and as he breaks the word of God open to us. Peter, it's our joy to have you here.
Thank you. Just 1 week before his demise, Mr. Honecker, who was the leader of the government in Communist East Germany, made this statement last fall. In the midst of all of the tremendous interest in the world and East Europe events, the shaking up of movements, as we watched so intently on our television sets, Mr. Honecker said, "The Berlin Wall will last at least another 100 years. And then events took place that were absolutely mind-boggling, because we've always had the impression and the idea that the Iron Curtain had in it an eternal ring. Just the sound of an Iron Curtain appeared to us to be something, the curtain and all that it represented, that could hardly change. In view of the past 72-year history and all that we have seen, the power, the military power, the seeming political power, the seeming unity and widespread interest in this philosophy around the world." George Will, noted columnist, shortly after this wrote an article on what was taking place in Eastern Europe, and he said this. He said, "What we are seeing in Eastern Europe," and he wrote this just recently, the first part of this year, "what we are seeing in Eastern Europe, in the Soviet Union, is comparable to what took place in the Protestant Reformation as regards the historic potential for the future. We are seeing, in the past several months, genuine revolution in two ways. We've been seeing the physical demise of European communism, as was illustrated by the Berlin Wall, and as we saw on television, the events that took place in Romania with the hundreds of thousands gathering together to protest their past years of oppression. But I think even more important, we have seen in the minds and the hearts of people the demise of an idea that, in their way of thinking, failed to give them what they were looking for. These people were lied to all of their lives as far as personal fulfillment, personal needs being met and satisfied. And this philosophy told them life was all on one level, the human materialistic level. And today we have scores of millions of people reaching out for something they haven't had, for a dimension in life that was kept from them. I've just returned from 3.5 weeks in the Soviet Union. My parents came from Russia. I was raised on the language and the culture. In the past 13 months, it's been my opportunity to be in the Soviet Union 4 different times. And I must say that I would be hard-pressed to tell you that I met even one person of the hundreds of people I spoke with in the past 13 months, even one person who would tell me that Marxism, communism was the answer to the needs and problem of their countries and of their personal lives. In fact, what is astounding is this. Last week, Mr. Gorbachev, of all people, as he was traveling in central Russia in the Ural Mountains trying to prop up his ideas and the direction he's attempting to go in the Soviet Union, in speaking to the crowds of people, made this statement. He said, if we do not get out of the system we're in, excuse my rough talk, then everything living in our society will die. We'll begin to asphyxiate. And at the same time, one of his chief economic advisors said, the same day, in fact, if economic change does not take place in the Soviet Union, we'll find ourselves in a common grave. This morning, we're not zeroing in on the economic and political situation of the Soviet Union, except for the fact that this economic and political situation had also promised the people spiritual fulfillment in life. And this has not happened. A couple of weeks ago, I was in the city of Kyiv in a cancer hospital for Chernobyl victims. And we just learned this past week of the enormous implications of Chernobyl, which were not evident to the rest of the world. And several hundred thousand people possibly will have to be moved from poisonous areas, especially in White Russia, that were terribly affected by the Chernobyl nuclear fallout. And as we met in this hospital for several hours, and as we passed out illustrated New Testaments such as this to the victims and parents who are with the children, and to the doctors and to the nurses who are very, very disillusioned and looking for deeper meaning in life in view of all of the frustration and the problems of the past months and years. We met together with some of the mothers who were there with their children. The mothers came up to us and said, these doctors who are here, we love them, but they can't help our children because of the lack of medicines and equipment. Won't you help us somehow? And one of the doctors said to us, very frankly, he said, Marxism is a total failure. And what he was getting at was this, the whole system, all of the promises that were made to the people, promises not only external but internal. In fact, the situation is so bad now in the Soviet Union that people are talking openly about the possibility of civil war in the Soviet Union. And this in a country where the military hardware is of such good quality and where now the very basic consumer needs, including food, are in such short supply and demand. Well, the question is, how does all of this affect the average citizen in the Soviet Union? Of the hundreds of people I met, what I discovered was frustration and gloom and disillusionment. But to me, also very important, the search for alternative values, the search for spirituality, which they've never had opportunity to understand, never had opportunity to explore. And today, what is absolutely fascinating to me is to meet with Communist Party members, government officials, university students, the man in the street, and all of these people reaching out for spirituality, not knowing really what it means. We're not seeing spiritual revival in the Soviet Union. How can there be revival when people don't know who God is, when people don't know who Jesus is, when the vast majority of people have never even seen a Bible, let alone held one in their hands? Yet people speaking out, asking questions very boldly about the spiritual dimension in life, which has been forcibly kept from them and purposely kept from them over the past 72 years. Interestingly, 2 years ago, it was against the law for Communist Party members to have any kind of official interest in religion or to speak about religion and to speak against Marxism. And now, these people, as we saw on May 1, in the rallies held in the Soviet Union and other countries, people speaking out openly, people disillusioned, people searching. These were those who were raised on Lenin's philosophy, and it was Lenin who said that every idea of God was vile. It was Lenin who taught that the world and people, man in the world, would never be fulfilled in life and have his needs met until man was released from the idea of a God, because it was God who crippled man and reduced him to a robot, because man used God as a crutch, and consequently, man was useless to society as long as he leaned on God. It was Lenin then who introduced the teaching of atheism as a part of the Soviet curriculum, educational curriculum, and so that every single person living in the Soviet Union today has been raised on compulsory atheism in the school system. And these, of course, being Christians and non-Christians. And then it was Stalin who followed Lenin. And Stalin tried to eliminate the church forcibly. He tried to finish what Lenin didn't. And by 1939, there were only 4 Protestant churches left open in the entire Soviet Union. And during that time, Stalin tried to kill off all of the evangelical preachers he could find, and he sent over 25,000 to slave death camps, where over 23,000 died. And then it was Khrushchev who followed Stalin. And Khrushchev tried to finish what Stalin didn't. And in the late 1950s and early 1960s, Khrushchev closed some 15,000 to 20,000 Christian churches in the Soviet Union. And in 1959, he went on nationwide television in the Soviet Union and announced that by 1965, he would have eliminated all Christians, and he would have found the last Christian and put him on nationwide television to show the people of the Soviet Union what a Christian used to look like. And it was Brezhnev who followed Khrushchev. And Brezhnev continued this policy and philosophy. And it was Brezhnev who imprisoned thousands of Christian leaders. We started a prayer program. We call it Strategic Prayer for Russia. And some of you were involved in that program. We gave you the names of 2 people in prison, 2 Christian leaders in prison, to pray specifically for these people, that God would keep his hand upon them and use them. And interesting, these people, these Christians, looked upon their time in the Gulag as an opportunity for mission work among this people group that couldn't be reached or evangelized in any other way. Be that as it may, there was this oppression, which continued under Gorbachev as he first came into power. But then something amazing happened. January 1988. In the midst of all the oppression, the heartaches of 72 years of murderous opposition, no opportunity to understand, for all practical purposes, the spiritual dimension of life, because theoretically it was illegal. During all these years, even though Christians did live for the Lord, witnessed, theoretically it was against the law to change anyone's thinking from Marxism. In January of 1988, the Christians decided that what they needed was a week of fasting and prayer for their country, for their government, for their young people who were inundated with atheism, who were openly discriminated against in the schools if they were Christians. And so the Christians announced this week of prayer and fasting all across the Soviet Union. Those of us in the West involved in radio ministry, and Slavic Gospel Association pioneered Russian radio work in the Soviet Union in 1941. And in fact, your missionaries, the Lushenyas, were the first Russian radio Christian career missionaries in Russian Christian radio. And they became involved in 1942, missionary station HCJB in Quito, Ecuador. And from that point of communication, missionary radio advanced from Ecuador through the Far East Broadcasting Company, then through Trans World Radio, and now some 15 Christian international missionary stations broadcast the gospel daily into the Soviet Union, covering all parts of the Soviet Union. Well, from our office in Wheaton, where we have a staff of some 30 Russians, the largest group and contingency of Russian Christians anywhere in the world outside the Soviet Union. And as we produce the Christian broadcast from Wheaton, send out the tapes to these stations around the world, and as we produce the Christian books and Bibles there, we decided to stand with the Christians, and we broadcast special programs during that week and announcing to the entire Soviet Union the week of fasting and prayer. Well, at the same time, this was the beginning of the millennial celebration, the 1,000th year celebration of Christianity in the Soviet Union. Before 1988, When Mr. Gorbachev first came to power, the Communist Party was not going to allow the church to officially hold this celebration. But Mr. Gorbachev recognized, as he knew behind the scenes, the crisis of the economic situation in Russia, which no one understood, because we didn't have the facts, and even the people of Russia didn't. Something inside of him, something in his thinking and mind, decided that the people that he was oppressing and persecuting, the people that his predecessors had oppressed as being enemies of the state, the Christians, he suddenly recognized that these were the people who could help him with reconstruction or perestroika, the word that became suddenly very popular. After all, the Christians didn't get drunk. They were honest. They put in a hard day's work at the factory. These were the people whom they were oppressing that the Soviet state needed, maybe more than anyone else. And so Mr. Gorbachev decided to enlist the Christians instead of oppressing them. And on March 23rd of 1988, a historic statement was delivered by Mr. Gorbachev, and he announced to the Soviet Union and to the world that from that day forward to this day, March 23rd, 1988, it was no longer illegal to send Bibles or Christian books into the Soviet Union. Until that time, you know how difficult it was to get even one Christian book into the Soviet Union. The Iron Curtain was shut. And suddenly, tens of millions of Soviet citizens started searching for the Bible. And this action was symbolic of another revolution that was taking place that Mr. Gorbachev and the Communist Party didn't really understand the significance of, and that was a spiritual revolution. Christian agencies such as ours have been producing books and Bibles and trying to get them into the Soviet Union during those hard years. And if we got in 100,000, we thought that was really good. And it was, because everyone was done with great difficulty. But as this spiritual interest, which started as a stream or a river, suddenly expanded into a flood, and as the people of the Soviet Union were now able to speak out openly under glasnost that which was secret in their hearts and minds, and as their disillusionment came out into the open about all that they were taught and all that it stood for, the lying, the stealing, the oppression, the killing, now this interest in spiritual things has become a flood. Last year, for example, we as a mission agency, just one agency, were able to get 2 million Bibles, books, and pieces of Christian literature into the Soviet Union. This year, it'll be even larger. Let me illustrate something of the spiritual revolution that is taking place in communist Soviet Union today. Last November, I was called to come to the Soviet mission to the United Nations in New York City. I went together with our chief senior book editor, a Russian national who immigrated from the Soviet Union recently, was a journalist in the Soviet Union, became a Christian here, and then two others. And we talked with a man who came from the Soviet government, representing the Children's Fund, one of the outstanding contemporary writers in the Soviet Union, and spoke on behalf of children, spoke to the United Nations that morning. Then that afternoon, we talked for 3 hours. And in a nutshell, this is what he said. Not a Christian, but sympathetic toward the needs of the common man in the Soviet Union today. He said, our society has no more value system left, no foundation of morality. And he said, if things continue as they are in the Soviet Union, our country is facing catastrophe. Those were his words. But then he continued and said, I believe, and I have learned recently, that the Bible contains the kind of information that I believe our people in the Soviet Union need. Would you give us 50 million Bibles, and we will distribute them to the families of Russia? I said, do you understand what 50 million Bibles means? There's never been this kind of a distribution. He was all serious, and he said, yes, I understand, and we have the capability of distributing these Bibles to the people. We need them. The same month, I was at a professional conference of Sovietologists in Chicago. My wife read a paper at a seminar. There were hundreds of seminars at this Congress. And the paper was on Christian literature under Gorbachev. And at the end of the paper, a man stood up in the front, of the room, and he introduced himself as being from the Academy of Sciences in the Soviet Union, a Soviet sociologist. And he said, this paper interested me because a group of sociologists in the Soviet Union have just done a survey, and we have discovered that the most asked for book in the Soviet Union today is the Bible. And furthermore, we have done research in view of the fact that we have no more value system left in the Soviet Union with the demise of Marxism. And we have examined all of the major value systems of the major countries of the world, and we have decided that the value system that we feel would be best for the Soviet Union is the Ten Commandments. Well, when I heard this, of course, my ears opened, and I immediately got acquainted with this man, and we spent several days together. In fact, he came with a proposal, which I'll tell you about this afternoon in more detail, and all the ramifications of it. And we became involved with this group of sociologists in the Soviet Union, and we took a team there this past January. And what we've discovered is that the spiritual interest in the Soviet Union is absolutely monumental today. In fact, a mission leader was with me 2 weeks ago in the Soviet Union, and he said, I think this is one of the most amazing situations that the church has faced in this century. Here are 400 million people, the Soviet Union and Eastern Europe, and we're talking only about the Soviet Union today, searching for God but not knowing how to find Him, with, as it were, false religions having been eliminated by Marxism over the past 70 years, no competition. The Marxist philosophy has vanished. The people have recognized that they were lied to. They're absolutely empty and in a vacuum spiritually, and they're reaching and not knowing what they're reaching for. 50 million Bibles being requested. We decided this was of such major proportion that we as a mission decided that the American public needs to know of the amazing things that God is doing in this part of the world where we thought everything was hopeless spiritually. And so we took a film crew in 2 weeks ago. And I was there for 2 weeks with this film crew and a week before to prepare and to try to decide how can we film this hunger for spirituality. Let me just give you a few examples very briefly of what we discovered. I was invited to a baptismal service in the city of Moscow by a little lake. Nothing unusual about this. Most Christians in the Soviet Union baptize in lakes or rivers. Their churches are not equipped with baptismals, and they immerse. However, the unusual part about this was it was winter, and the lake was frozen, and there were people ice fishing on the lake. And a 15-foot square area was broken through the ice, and this is where the baptismal service was held. And this was not unusual. What we're discovering is the reason God is working in communist Russia, where the leaders have literally tried to eliminate Christianity physically, forcibly, the reason it continues and the reason God is working today in the communist world is because this is the kind of Christian we find, the core group that remains in the Soviet Union. Powerful core of Christians who are willing to stand up for Christ, and these Christians wanted to have a public witness of the fact they'd become Christians now. They didn't want to wait. And as the custom is, at every baptismal service outside, they also have an evangelistic service right after the baptismal. And for example, I had opportunity to speak to two visitors who had stopped as I backed off from the crowd and stood back and watched the scene. And two men came along very interested, had opportunity to tell them, to try to explain to them what's going on here, to tell them about Christ. And this exactly was the purpose of the service, the baptismal procession and the service and all that was happening there. A powerful core of committed people willing to follow Christ through murderous opposition and wanting to follow Him in baptism even in winter. Secondly, we discovered a nation of spiritually searching people looking for God but not knowing where or how to find Him. Our film crew went on the busiest street of Moscow, the Arbat, where there's no automobile traffic and thousands of people milling around a shopping street. We took 10 or 15 Christian young people with us, and we got on a street corner and started singing and preaching. And immediately, hundreds of people gathered to listen, to hear. We had several hundred small gospel portions with us, which immediately evaporated into the crowd. And then we went into the crowd one-on-one to interview them. And this was one of the most fascinating experiences of my life, as I took the microphone and went up to an adult and asked him, do you feel that you need more spirituality in your life? And what was interesting was immediately 20 or 30 people, other adults, would gather around, not laughing, not embarrassed, but in sympathy with the person who was being interviewed. And what we heard from all the 20 or 25 we interviewed was the same. Yes, we've been lied to. Something is missing in our lives. We don't know what it is. And I would ask, well, where do you think you could find this spirituality? Well, maybe we heard something about the church, and this was Easter time. And we've heard something about a Bible. Well, do you have a Bible? Well, of course not. You can't get Bibles here in this country. Would you like to have a Bible? Well, definitely. Fortunately, I had a piece of Christian literature. I had something for every one of these people, and that was one of the joys of being able to give them this after this kind of interview. One woman just started crying out of the sincerity and hunger of her heart. Another person said to me, I don't know what I'm living for. In all sincerity, you know, unashamedly, with all of these other people around, I don't know what the purpose of life is. And I stopped the film crew and I said, we've got to do a little evangelizing here. We've got people who we've got people who want to know the Lord right here and now. We can't wait. And so we had a time of witness here. And this is what we discovered everywhere. On Sunday night, Easter, we were inside a football stadium seating 35,000 people. The Christians received permission from the government to rent this stadium for four services. It's Easter afternoon, evening, Monday, and Tuesday. A total of 60,000 people attended the four services. 3 days before, how fascinating it was to see a truck, a semi-truck, from our office of Slavic Gospel in West Germany pull up to this football stadium and unload 44,000 New Testaments. We brought in some 80,000 New Testaments in a truck to Moscow. Help unload it. And then that Sunday night, to see the thousands pouring in, everyone received the New Testament as they came. 95% of these people were non-believers. The meeting lasted 3 hours and a quarter. At the invitation after the sermon, the preacher simply asked if people would like to come to Christ to stand where they were. 75% of the people stood on their feet wanting to receive Christ as their Savior. And what we discovered was that here was the city of Moscow with 9 million people, one Protestant church reaching out, five or six little house churches with 50 or 60 people each. And because there are so few evangelical churches reaching out boldly with the gospel, what is happening now is the communists, under the pretense of lectures or debates with Christians, are inviting Christian leaders to come into their communist lecture halls in the major cities across the Soviet Union. They're inviting an atheist and a Christian leader to come to debate Christianity. Many, many are gathering. One preacher told me, he was at a meeting recently with 1,000 people present in one of these communist lecture halls. The atheist was speaking first. As he was speaking, a woman stood up nonchalantly in the back of the auditorium and said, "Sir, would you mind sitting down? We've been hearing this propaganda for 70 years. She said, "We'd like to hear what the preacher has to say now." One evangelist told me in Kiev, his name is Vitaly, he said, "These are the kind of opportunities we have." He said, "Recently I was at a meeting in a lecture hall with 500 people where I preached, all non-believers. After I gave the gospel, I asked, who wants to become a follower of Christ? All 500 stood. I was at another meeting with 800 recently, and I asked, who want to become believers? All 800 stood. I was at a meeting with 1,000 people recently. At the invitation, all 1,000 stood. This is a little bit of what God is doing in the Soviet Union today. The question is, what are we going to do about it? There are a number of practical things that we can do. One of them is this. We started a people-to-people program, encouraging an American church to become aligned with a Russian church. and to supply them with Christian materials, Bibles, Christian books, for evangelistic distribution, to train preachers. There are approximately 75 to 100,000 preachers in Russia, lay people, with no seminaries or training institutions for Protestants. These people need training materials, which are now available, which we are getting into the Soviet Union. Bibles, New Testaments are needed, Sunday school materials. It was against the law to have Sunday schools until a year ago. And now 3,000 or 4,000 Protestant churches are attempting to start them. And what they need are materials like this study pictorial Bible. To us, this is a comic book, but in the Soviet Union, this is not just for children. What we've learned is for atheists who know nothing about God and would like to have one of these because it's an introduction to Christianity. And so, the Sister Church program is now in practice. It's now available, and the challenge to your church is that you would become aligned with one of the churches of Russia. Also, exchanges are now possible between Christian professors and students in schools here in the United States with schools in the Soviet Union. Jesus talked to us and said, "Who is the greatest person on earth?" The greatest person is not necessarily one with the greatest education or social standing. In the scripture lesson we heard today, Jesus said the greatest person is the person who is closest to God. And the person closest to God is the person who is seeking to know and to do God's will. At this mission conference, one of the purposes of the conference is that you might understand more of what God's will is for your life and for the church. God has a plan and a purpose for every one of us as individuals and as a church. And the question is, are we close to God? Are we actively seeking His will? Are we attempting to fulfill God's will? It's very plain. God is not willing that any should perish. And Jesus said, "Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature." May God help us to become an active part of His will and His program. Thank you.
Peter, we did a little homework before you got here, and we found out about the Adopt-A-Church program. And through the generosity of the Ruth M. Snell Fund, the Executive Committee of the Mission Board has authorized a check for $3,775. We want to have a sister church.
We appreciate this very much, and I'd like to assign the church in the city of Odessa, one of the most creative evangelical outreaches in the Soviet Union, and I'll be giving you the address and information on how to contact the church and have correspondence and communication with them, and they will deeply appreciate this gift.
Once again, we are privileged at Park Street Church to touch the world, and this is a new way in which we can touch the world.